Hello and welcome to another episode of the Stephen Reed Podcast. Today we have Sophie Hale from A Boat Full of Wool, and we're talking about her business and what life's like on the water. And welcome. Today we have Sophie Hale joining me on today's podcast. Sophie is a crafter and crochet extraordinaire. She, like myself and Dan Handley, previous guests, both all live on the canal in narrowboats. And Sophie actually runs her crafting business off of the canal boat. And I thought I'd start off the podcast by giving you a gift. This is actually the first time I've ever given anyone a gift on the podcast. So I'm going to give you here an avocado stone.
Ah, thank you.
Would you like to explain why? Or shall I explain why I've given you an avocado stone?
No, I'll go ahead. So avocado stone, that's brilliant. Thank you, Stephen. So I do natural dyeing in my narrow boat. So I forage the towpath for different dye matters, and also with the avocado stones I would use food waste from my kitchen to dye with, and next year I'm going to be running some workshops on natural dyeing.
And what other workshops do you do on your boat?
So I do beginner's crochet, and I do arm knitting, I do children's workshops, and I also go into lots of West Berkshire schools and teach lots of children different ranges of crafts.
You've been doing your business now for about a year, is that right?
Yeah, that is. Yep. So my mission with my business is to get more young people involved in crafting. I don't want heritage crafts to die out for younger generations to come.
And how did you get into crafting in the first place? Because like you suggest, it's not that common in our population, our sort of younger generation. How on earth did it come about that you started doing crocheting and all these dyeing and things like that?
So I started knitting when I was 7, and them skills were taught by my nan, which then were followed on by my mum. So it was kind of passed down like the generations. And then I just at school went to knitting club and kept it up. And then also I am a self-taught crocheter. So I, you know, watch YouTube videos and also like looked at books and stuff like that, and just taught myself really with the assistance of my nan. And then it was only from then that I just love crochet because it's so quick to work with, and I started making all my own clothes, and I now design crochet patterns based on like jumper designs and also hat patterns, which I sell on Etsy.
That's awesome. How did you obviously you taught me crocheting recently,
mm-hmm.
And I seemed to pick it up quite well, and I really enjoyed how simple it was, because I've also tried knitting in the past,
yeah,
and I found that ridiculously like tough really compared to crochet. And when you miss or you mess up, you have to almost take out like a whole line
really
or
do.
Go all the way
needle.
Back to the start.
Yeah.
But how did you get from just doing it by yourself as a hobby to actually setting up a business, and now obviously you're living on the boat and you're doing that as your sole job, really. How did that transition from that to that?
So when I was working as a nanny, I was working like part-time, so 4 days a week, and I had that day off to really connect with my crafts again. And I set up an Instagram account to like show my work and stuff. And I think like showing your work's like quite a big step, because like you're putting your work out there, and you're, you know, people could judge you on what you're making, or people could like might not like it, but it's having the confidence to show what your work is actually good, that you feel that you're comfortable with it. So it was only that I got it out there and just kind of fell into like the crochet community on Instagram. And I saw like other makers were teaching and it really inspired me. And I thought, you know, living on the boat, it also like really brings you back to like that slow pace of life, but it also is such a great venue for like people to come out and like, you know, come to a workshop and stuff. So also I want to give people that experience that you can escape for a couple of hours from like the hustle and bustle of like our like busy lives and just come and in this lovely space with a really nice surrounding and come and learn some like skills for life and some like crafts you can connect with.
I definitely found that the things like craft, they absorb you into just, you know, you time goes by without thinking about it. And like you say about the boat and being out here in what feels like the middle of nowhere, you've really got that space to switch off from the outside world and really concentrate on what you're doing and forget about the stresses and things like that. What were some of the challenges that you had when you transitioned into starting your own business?
So obviously, like, you've got to really fully commit to what you're doing within the business. So for me, I was set my business up alongside my current job. So I was not fully fledging from my job and just taking that plunge completely, but I was making sure that the idea was trial and tested first and that it would work. So I did, you know, on my day off, I would teach in the evenings as well, and also on the weekends, teaching as much as I could. And that's when I began to think, actually, this is really working, and that people are really loving the idea of coming to the boat as well, because it's a whole experience in one, not just learning a craft in, say, a village hall. You're coming to experience the narrow boat and the walk from the car to the boat and the surroundings and as well as the teaching experience as well, and coming away with something. So, you know, I really tried and tested that out first, and then I quit my job completely in the March of this year. And that was it. I've, you know, ever since just been pushing myself even more and growing my business. I've now go into 4 West Berkshire schools and, you know, teach children every week different crafts, different skills. And next year I'm also going to be teaching crochet in a college. So that's like a new experience. And also I do teach in like other venues other than the boat, so it gives like a good broad range and like people can find me, but it's also just making my business grow as well, and that connection.
Do you have any particular goals in mind or anything you'd like to achieve with your business in, say, 2019 or the years coming after that?
So, you know, like I said, I've got my natural dyeing courses coming out, and I think that will be a nice fresh challenge for me because it's something unique and people will be coming to the boat and we'll be foraging from the towpath. So it'd be a really nice experience. So I really want to get that out there and get more people hearing about my business, A Boat Full of Wool. Personal like challenges. I'd love to make my own whole wardrobe. So I'd love to make all like everything in my wardrobe all handmade. That's like one of my kind of dreams, kind of challenges, is to make everything, not just crochet but sewing as well, so just a mixture of skills.
I see. I was thinking I'm not sure how you'd manage to crochet a pair of jeans, but I'd like to see. I think that'd be good. What would be the most difficult piece of clothing to make out of your wardrobe, do you think?
In terms of crochet?
Well, just when you make your own wardrobe, what's going to be the most challenging thing to make?
Probably underwear.
Yeah. But, yeah, I could see that, actually.
Yeah.
I'd not thought about that.
No. So, but yeah, no, it's just, you know, a dream. And I just think that with today, you know, what's going on in the modern world today, like with slow fashion, and I'm just really conscious of that now, and also like where like my material comes from, so making sure stuff's like organic cotton or bits like that. And to be honest, it's really hard to find good online companies that sell natural organic clothing, and if you do, it's quite expensive. So, you know, it's a challenge for me to set and actually, you know, something niche to find.
Yeah, really. It definitely puts you in a field on your own, doesn't it? In terms of the craft sphere, not that my knowledge is that deep, but I can't imagine there's that many people doing what you do with all the organic materials and like you say, with the setting you're in as well. You mentioned slow fashion. Can you just explain to me what that means?
So, like, obviously with, you know, fashion's really fast at the moment in terms of like the high street. So like people are buying lots and lots of clothes and just throwing them away, you know, and fashion is quick. So lots of things come in and out of fashion quickly. With slow fashion, obviously it's like reusing clothes, upcycling them, buying from charity shops, or making your own. And obviously with me designing crochet patterns, that's kind of like slow fashion within, really, because obviously, you know, if you make a crochet jumper, it's going to take you a week to make it, and you appreciate the time and the effort that's gone into it. So you really, you know, you would hang on to that piece of clothing a lot longer than, say, just a jumper you picked up on the high street, because, you know how much work and time has gone into it.
Yeah, I've certainly tried myself to avoid buying high street brands, and initially it was because actually that they're really expensive, and I found myself digging around in charity shops and finding some pretty good finds, and I got like a Jack Wills hoodie for about £4, and I've got some really nice shirts from other charity shops, you know, really cheap. And actually it wasn't until a while into doing that I found out that the fashion industry, it actually contributes quite a lot to you know, the global pollution, and actually, if you think about, you know, people like Primark or other big companies like that, I'm sure they're, you know, the way they produce their clothes aren't that ethical either.
No,
really.
Definitely.
So there's definitely a lot of benefits to it. And
definitely.
Something I noticed actually, there's I've lost one or two buttons off a shirt, or maybe there's a bit of a rip or something, and actually it wasn't that long ago where everyone would be repairing their own clothes and,
yeah, that's true,
and keeping them going for a lot longer, but I have none of those skills, and so maybe it's something I should try and look into a little bit more.
Definitely. Maybe it's a new workshop for me.
You reckon?
Yeah, I mean, it would be good, you know, if we could get people together, and some people don't know how to, you know, put zips in clothes or even, like you said, buttons. So yeah, it would be a good skills workshop, definitely.
I'm sure. I think is something quite nice about being able to, you know, fend for yourself and actually, you know, instead of chucking things out when they're perfectly salvageable, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who've been doing this for a long time, and actually these skills in the general population are probably not that far from being lost, really, because we are so reliant, like many things, on the big businesses, aren't we, to keep feeding us with all these new clothes.
Absolutely.
Have you noticed any other trends in terms of like fashion since you started getting involved with that type of thing?
I think that crochet's really come back on the catwalk. So you can see a lot, you know, lots of crochet in high street shops like Zara, Topshop. So I think for me, doing a beginner's crochet, a granny square workshop's really good, because it can show people that actually you can make your own, you know, granny square scarf from Topshop instead of buying it. You've made your own, and, you know, it might be a bit cheaper as well. And, you know, the precious, you know, love of it that you've made it.
It's more rewarding, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I'd definitely love to get into more making things with my hands, and not really in terms of my own clothing, but I'd certainly love to get more into making things out of wood or you know, just being a bit more handy and fixing things around my home. You mentioned obviously about your goal to make your own wardrobe, but is there anything outside of the crafting stuff that you do that you have in terms of goals for next year? Have you got anything you want to achieve?
It'd be quite nice to, you know, go somewhere new on our boat. So, you know, explore a new place that we've not been. That would be lovely.
Where would you go to first, if you could?
Well, I'd love to travel the whole canal system, but I know that's not achievable for next year. So just maybe moving a bit further than we normally do to a new spot that we haven't been to in a while would be really nice. So, yeah.
That's awesome. And I'm hopefully going to do the same really on my boat when I'm start working in Reading next year. I'm going to hopefully try and explore the Thames a little bit more and just expand my knowledge of the canal and, you know, the waterways.
Definitely.
Have you noticed any changes in yourself since you moved onto the boat?
Yes, I have. So just like feeling more connected to like your surroundings. So like waking up and opening the doors and looking outside, and it might be frosty and a nice sunny morning, and just there's just a connection that I can't describe, that you feel, you know, really connected to nature within, and also just more simple things in life. So just, you know, going out for a nice dog walk and then coming in, you know, when it's cold, coming into the really hot, warm boat and making a cup of tea. It's just the feeling. So you just appreciate like more simple things in life than you would maybe in a house or in different lifestyles, really.
And what's something that you don't like about the boat life, or what's something, a challenge that you really don't like about the lifestyle? Because it's not all jolly, is it?
No, but to be honest, it's really hard to find a negative, because you know, you just adapt as a person and you just try and make the best of a situation, and that's what I try and do as a person. But probably the stress of the Canal River Trust maybe
really?
Is the bane of my life. But other than that, I can't think of anything, you know, else really on a daily scale or routine. Yeah,
I've definitely noticed the community's been really good since I've moved on the boat, and you've actually introduced me to quite a few people.
Yeah.
So far, and I've only been moving on the boat for about 3 months, really.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone that springs to mind as probably the wackiest or the most interesting person that you've met since you've been moving on the canal?
I just think there's so many individuals on the canal that everyone has their own story to tell. So you have, you know, all walks of life, all ages, and everyone has their own experience. Obviously, everyone obviously looks different, and everyone has their own quirks and personalities, but I just think everyone you meet is just lovely, and, you know, everyone says hi, and it's just a really nice community, and I'm so happy to be part of it.
Something me and Dan talked about on the podcast we recorded about the things we like about the boat was foraging and being a bit closer to nature. And you've obviously gone into looking into the things you can use it on the towpath for clothing,
yeah,
and dyeing for your workshops. What type of things, other than obviously avocado stones, which you can't find on the towpath, what things are you picking? Because I don't really know any of them, I don't think.
So obviously different times of year depends. So at the moment, with it being winter, there's lots of elder cones around, which, you know, overhang the canal. They have small little kind of mini pine cones on, really. And you can heat them up and they make a lovely kind of peachy yellow colour. So lots of dyes matters that you find. Actually, you know, you'll be surprised what colours you get from them as well. And like in the summer, you can like forage nettles, and that's more of an obvious one. You'd get green. But there's just lots of different plants around, and it's really nice because every mooring spot we go to, there'd be like a different like plant or shrub or flower that I can get. And it's really nice because you kind of make, with the dyes, you make memories along the towpath of what dyes you found where. So that's really nice.
What's your favourite thing that you've made so far with the dyeing? Have you got any highlights in particular?
I just love dyeing loads of different pieces of fabric, which I hope to make into like a patchwork blanket. And then like in some way I might label up like some of the like patches to what plant it was so that I can remember. And like, it's just like almost like a memory blanket as well of like location too. But yeah, it looked really nice and effective.
That sounds nice. I'm still waiting my memory blanket. My mum's been making this crochet blanket since she started your course.
Aww.
I don't know how long ago it was, but she was the reason why I sort of got back in touch with you really, because after a long time, we were friends at school, but after a long time we'd had lost touch, and you'd gone to college and I'd gone to university and sixth form. And actually it was only through her finding your craft business on Facebook that actually I found out that you even lived on a boat, and it's just by chance that we actually ended up mooring next to each other. But I imagine it was probably only a matter of time before I did message you and Dan to find out a little bit more about the boat life. But yeah, like I say, I'm still waiting for my it's not a patchwork blanket, but my crochet blanket.
Crochet granny square blanket. Yeah. Oh, that's lovely though.
It's come on really well. And she's actually been to quite a few of your, she's probably your biggest advocate, I think, for your craft group.
Definitely. She's definitely my best customer.
She certainly is.
Oh, that's nice.
But yeah, she's taken it on quite a lot, and I think she'd like me to try and get a little bit more involved in crafting and whatnot. But she's
definitely.
Yeah, she loves it to bits. In terms of things that I'd like to try and do with, you know, with the boat really, and exploring the idea of the uniqueness of it, is maybe trying to kind of invite people on, you know, people that are walking up and down the towpath to try and, you know, have a cup of tea and meet some people.
That's a lovely
I've thought
idea.
About maybe putting a sign up outside and saying, you know, welcome in for a free cup of tea or whatnot, to try and get people involved. But what's so unique about the boat? Because I know a lot of people, and a lot of people have some experience of the boat, but what do you think is so unique about it compared to just say any other boat?
My boat in particular?
Well, just the canal and the narrow boat.
So what like always baffles my mind is that when you're standing outside your boat, or a boat in particular, that when you go inside, it's completely not how you expect. So like the space really opens up and there's lots of character and every boat's individual. But when you stand on the outside, you always wonder what's inside really, because it's kind of like just a metal shell. And
it's a bit like a TARDIS in a way as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, many boats have, you know, so much character to them, and you think, oh, how did that even go there or fit there? But it really does.
There's definitely a few boats along the canal as well that aren't quite so idyllic or pretty, are they?
No.
There's some that look like they're absolutely falling apart.
Mm.
There's one moored up down here, actually. It's not technically a narrow boat. There's a huge old Dutch barge thing moored just down the other side of the lock, and it's massive. But I'd love to go in and explore what that looks like, because like you say, they're all very different, and they've all got lots of character. But I've only ever really been on three narrow boats, really, three, you know, set up narrow boats. Yours, this one, and my friend's narrow boat, the one that we went on to get the experience to start with. Your plans in terms of the narrow boat life. Dan was saying actually how you'd maybe get like a wide beam or something. What's the biggest difference really between, or other than the obvious, like in terms of width, what are the differences between a wide beam and a narrow boat?
Just like the space feels, you know, more bigger, more room. You can have like two bedrooms and a wide beam. So if you're a family, then that would be perfect to have like a bedroom for your child. And yeah, obviously you're restricted to the canals, so you can only really go on the Kennet-Navan Canal here in Berkshire, or you can go up a little bit up the Grand Union, and obviously on the Thames, because that's nice and wide. So you are restricted. So you can't go up like the Leeds and Liverpool Canal. So if you were a travelling boat and you want to travel around the country, it's not a wide beam is not ideal for, you know, someone that wants to travel.
No, you're a bit restricted, I suppose. Your Christmas is obviously coming up at the moment, and I've got my little handmade tree over there in the corner with some fairy lights on. What's Christmas looking like for you, and what are you planning for Christmas?
So we've got our Christmas tree up. So we have a living tree that we actually keep on our deck of our boat all year, and then we bring it in like on the, you know, the 1st of December, and we, you know, decorate it up and stuff, and every year it grows on, so it like stays with us and it's part of us and it's part of the boat, so that's really nice. And also just being like cozy and like with a fire on, nice cozy evenings, lots of Christmas baking. So at the moment as we speak, we've got some panettone rising near the fire. Nice. So yeah, it should be lovely.
And your dog, Twiggy.
Yeah.
Have you bought Twiggy a present for Christmas?
Well, she'll definitely be getting one because she is definitely part of the family, but not as of yet.
Okay. Because there's a tradition in my family where the cat usually gets probably the best present out of everyone. She's spoiled. And I think a lot of people tend to get their animals' presents. And you've actually got an advent calendar, haven't you, for your, for your dog?
Yeah, she's got a nice advent calendar with lots of bones tied, little mini bones tied to it. So
how old is Twiggy?
She's 18 months old.
You wouldn't know because she's such a placid, lovely dog.
Yeah.
How did you get Twiggy in the first place?
So my partner Dan, who was in the previous podcast, he wanted a dog, I think one of his clients had a cockapoo, which, you know, the breed of Twiggy is. We just looked online and, we've never looked back really. So we've had since June last year. And she's a big part of us and Narrow Boat Life. And she's been a puppy on board the boat. So she's known no different.
And you met Dan at college, is that right?
Yeah, so I met him at Sparshot College when we were both studying. So he was studying horticulture, and I was studying countryside management. So yeah, it was really nice. We met in the library, as you do. Yeah.
I wouldn't think you two would meet in the library, but there you go.
Yeah.
Well, you were doing countryside management, you said.
Yeah.
What made you go and do that?
So I've always loved like the outdoors and wildlife. And my parents have always told me to like always do what you enjoy. So I just didn't know what to do when I left school. So I thought, you know what, I'll just go and, you know, do that for 2 years. And I absolutely loved it. It was like the best 2 years of my life. And it gave me a real core foundation of where I wanted to go with like my career. And I feel like every kind of job I've done or every experience I've done has opened up doors to the next thing. And it's got me to where I am now.
'Cause you went from that to do nannying, is that right?
So I did my course at Sparshot for 2 years, and then I worked at the nursery on site, which was an outdoor nursery with yurts. And the children played outside all day in all weathers, which is quite intense to work at because obviously you're having to keep the spirits up outside when it's absolutely pouring down with rain. But obviously in the summer and the sun, it was gorgeous. That gave me a real base for childcare. And then I decided to, leave and become a nanny. And that's when that was kind of the transition of when we were buying our narrow boat.
Yeah. Because obviously you were doing the course at college for 2 years. Mm-hmm. What did it involve, the course itself?
So I did lots of different things from greenwood crafts, which is like spoon carving really, and wood turning. So that was one of our units. I've also done deer unit, so like there was opportunity to do like your rifle license, and I've got a quad bike license, so I can, you know, I've been trained in that, and woodland management, which I really enjoyed, and at the end of the course, I kind of wanted to go into like farm and wildlife advisory. So like advising farmers about what they can do to help improve wildlife on their farms. But unfortunately, there's not many jobs in that and there's lots of cuts in that area. So that's when I thought that I would like to go down the outdoor education route, which in the future, I'd still like to do my forest school like teacher training and be a forest school leader. So that's something I still really would like to do in the future.
And what's a forest school?
So forest schools are mainly like outdoor learning. Children either from, you know, state schools go out to the woods for a couple of hours and they go and build dens. They go and they make campfires and cook on them and just loads of outdoor kind of survival skills. So it's getting kids back to nature, which is definitely what, you know, this generation needs.
Sounds great, actually. I don't think we had very much of that type of learning when we were at school.
No.
I certainly got a little bit of that experience when I was in Scouts when I was younger, but I think a lot of kids would probably benefit from that and actually learn how to play even, because a lot of kids just rely on just, you know, TV
being entertained all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Like activities constantly where, you know, being back in nature and using their imaginations is so important now.
Definitely. What would you like so much about doing the forest schools?
Again, just getting kids back into nature and just seeing their imaginations grow, because everyone's interpretation's different of, you know, maybe a stick, they could make it into anything they want it to be. So that's amazing just to see that imagination like shine through on a child.
That's good. And if you couldn't do either of those things,
yeah,
you couldn't do your craft teaching,
yeah,
or you couldn't do the forest schooling,
yeah,
what in the world would you do?
Oh, that's a real hard question. I don't know. I mean, I would have said teaching if it was like a couple of years ago, but actually, I've got two close friends that have come out of teaching professions because of so much stress, and that's definitely what I wouldn't want. So I don't know, that's a really hard question, because I'm not someone to sit, you know, in an office. I don't think I'd enjoy that. I like to be out and about meeting people, lots of variety, and also just getting outside as well. So yeah, I'm not sure, that's a hard question.
Okay, well maybe expand it a little bit and ask you, if money was no object, what would you be doing with your time?
That's hard. So I just believe that money is, you know, is not really, you know, worth much to me, because like happiness is the key, and I think that people get too materialistic and they get too pressurized by, you know, especially this time of year at Christmas, like the expectation and having, you know, a massive tree and just, you know, brand new decorations. And I think people just get really like scooped into like materialism, and everyone follows each other to try and keep up with what everyone's doing. And I just think that's really quite sad, and that we should just branch off and be our individual person and find our own contentment and happiness in whatever way that, you know, may be. And for me, that's, you know, being close to nature, spending time with friends, family and like loved ones, and just doing like the simple things, which is, you know, really nice. And also, if money was no object, just traveling the world to see like amazing different places, because there are some beautiful places out there.
Where would you go? Where's your like top three destinations you would hit first when when you get all that money, which we're never getting?
No. So I love Italy. I definitely go there. I just love the culture. The people are always so happy. The food is absolutely amazing. And obviously the scenery is gorgeous. I'd go to New Zealand because it's just, to me, it looks like a nice, raw, like rugged country. There's not many people live in there, which is quite nice. And it's quite natural. And I'd quite like to go to a Scandinavian country. It's like Norway or somewhere like that. Just because that kind of whole hygiene feeling.
Hygiene? Sorry, what?
IG feeling. So, like, you know, the whole Scandi kind of feeling, just the simplistic, really. That's, you know, if you go to IKEA, you'll kind of see why.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I just love that. And also, like, I feel so connected to Pine Forest. And I know they've got some amazing forests, you know, in Scandinavia area region.
What do you mean you feel connected to pine forests?
Just like, I don't know, there's something about it that I just really touches close to the heart. It's just an amazing kind of like habitat for me. Like, I just love kind of any of the pine trees, and also the cones that they drop as well. I just think like they're all just like kind of like goodies that you can find in the woods, and also just like the smells they let off as well. Obviously you've got that fresh pine smell, and like eucalyptus, it's just really lovely. Kind of, I don't know, it just really touches home. And I love a good walk in a pine forest. I just, yeah, that really satisfies me.
Are there any good pine forests around here?
Yeah, there is. Yeah. So the weekend we went up to, it's just up the road from here in Solhamstead, in Mortimer. And they've got a lovely pine forest there. And it was really sunny. And then like heavens opened and it absolutely chucked it down with rain. And it was cold. And we obviously didn't have waterproofs on and we got soaked. And it was lovely. Like your hands were freezing and just the atmosphere was amazing. And coming home just to like a really nice warm boat, like I said earlier, and just making a cup of tea, like that was just so nice for me. And I still think, you know, still look back on Sunday and think, oh, that was really nice.
What tea did you have when you came in?
I don't know, actually, I can't remember. But
you quite like some of the like alternative teas, don't
yeah
you?
I think I had turmeric tea.
Okay.
It's really good for you. I try and drink that quite often.
What other teas do you drink?
I like turmeric, I like ginger, I like rooibos, just ordinary black tea, and also chai tea.
Mm.
Yeah, it's
like
really good.
Like chai latte or just the chai tea?
Oh, definitely the chai latte when you make it, Stephen. So good.
I love that stuff. Yeah, I'm well into my tea. I'd actually like to try some more tea in the future, but I don't really... I think I've probably not got enough space on the boat for it, to be honest.
Wow. Back in the summer, you and Dan were foraging pineapple weed tea?
Yeah.
We
that talked
was
about
amazing.
That on the last
oh,
podcast.
Oh, brilliant.
Actually.
That's really good. Yeah. Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it's good. Do you know of any other things you can make tea out of it from nature?
Well, I would quite like to try pine needle tea. I need to do some research, but I've heard it's got more antioxidants than a lemon, so I would love to try that because I think it's, you know, it would be like bringing the forest home in a cup.
something that interests me actually about you, and this is fairly similar to the idea of connection really, and it's a bit more of a spiritual thing, but you've tried and experimented with different things like Reiki and other healing methods.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about them?
So I've had, like you said, I've had Reiki and spiritual healing, and also shiatsu healing, and I, you know, regularly practice yoga as well. But I had a spinal fusion done back in when I was 18, and obviously that's quite a traumatic experience on your body. So I, you know, want to make sure that, because I've got like a fusion in my body, it's kind of like a foreign body, and I want to make sure that my body's accepting it, and that everything's, that in my body's, you know, kind of in line, and like the energy's flowing and that everything's okay. So I try and practice yoga, because a lot of the yoga moves and stuff is actually a lot related to like the physiotherapy that I went through after my surgery. So I'm trying to like maintain and condition that, because I don't want to get problems later in life. But yeah, I just think it's important to like give yourself like that self-care, because, you know, a lot of people rush around in their daily lives and obviously they don't give themselves that time. for themselves. You're, yeah.
In terms of the yoga, you're preaching them to the converted, because I love yoga myself, but actually as a physiotherapist, I often use a lot of yoga exercises and stretches and movements because they can be so beneficial for people. And found actually that a lot of people who have back trouble try and avoid moving their back at all costs, because they're afraid of injuring it, or you know, they're just scared in general because it's going to hurt if they move. And so actually a lot of the yoga is really good to encourage people to get their back moving again.
Definitely.
The Reiki itself, though, I think you've explained it to me, but I'm still not clear on actually what it is. You tell me about.
Okay. So Reiki. It's more of like it can be hands on or hands off. It's up to you and what you want. But I'd say like a lot of the practices is like what you experience. So you just go there if you have an intention in mind, you can express that or not. But it's, so I have it hands on and they just obviously touch different parts of your body to what they feel connected with. And yeah, you just kind of close your eyes and just, you know, go in the midst of it all. But it's really hard to explain it because it's kind of like a personal experience and like what you feel like in the time. And like, I don't know, it's really hard to describe. But I mean, I'd recommend anyone to try it because obviously it does help a lot of people. Like it helps a lot of people with anxiety or depression or any like ailment that you've got. It helps you overcome that, and it, you know, helps heal it. And obviously it does unblock like your energy path so that it flows, which sometimes you might be feeling a certain way because something's blocked and it can't quite resolve itself, or you know, the energy can't flow to that part. So by having some Reiki or some healing done, that can help everything move and flow properly in the body again.
What do you mean by an energy path?
So
what is that?
It depends what you believe in, but most of them practitioners say that, you know, the energy flows around your body, you know, going through to the different chakras in your body. So sometimes like it can get stuck or blocked, or you know, there could be some negative energy and they can help to correct that, or you know, help heal it.
Are there any similarities then between that and the spiritual healing?
They're all quite similar and they've all got their unique kind of propositions. But yeah, just try it and see what you think, or have a chat to a practitioner and see what, you know, it's mainly based on something that you've got or that you want to let go of, or an ailment. So it's best to talk to them practitioners individually to see what, you know, they recommend, or they might point you in the right direction to someone. But they would always, you'll find that most practitioners won't just take you on if it's not the right thing for you. They would point you in the right direction of someone they can recommend that it would be better for, because it's all about, you know, that, you know, this yourself, and like they don't want to just give you the wrong thing and take your money. That's just not what they're about.
No, and that's fairly reassuring, because actually I'm quite skeptical about those types of treatments, and I imagine going into them with a skeptical mindset would probably leave me I'm probably less likely to actually gain any benefit from them.
Yeah.
Are there any that you didn't gain benefit from, or any different ones that you tried which you wouldn't go back to?
No, everyone I've done has been really good. I just say that you just go in with an open mind, but also just like relax and be calm and just see what happens. Like it's just the experience personally that you experience and in the moment. I mean, I haven't had any of them practices done for a while, so I couldn't really tell you anyway, and it's probably not the right thing to share like more personal things like that, because that's, you know, a lot of like practitioners like that wouldn't share anything that they shouldn't with other people. And that's the same with you really, so it's kind of that experience.
That's fair enough. And you also got gemstones as well, right?
Crystals. It's okay.
Are they not the same thing, or is that just a colloquial term for,
I'm not sure, maybe there's some that are different to others.
What, how on earth did you get into collecting crystals, or were you using them?
Well, obviously they look really nice, so that's like a, I'm drawn to them as well. And also everyone has a crystal for their birth, like, so mine, like a birthstone. So mine is amethyst, and I always wear an amethyst. And each month has a different stone, like I said, but obviously, you know, you can just see what you're drawn to or look up in a book what they mean. So different things can mean different ones. So like rose quartz is like for like love, and there's just different, you know, stones for different things. So yeah, lots of people use them in different ways. Personally, I just have them as decorational purposes, and also, you know, sometimes I might, you know, put them in certain places as well.
Where is there a rhyme or reason to where you'd put them?
Like, so some people like put them next to their bed if they need, you know, if they're not sleeping well, and there might be a crystal that can help them with that. It's something that I'm still learning about, but I know that a lot of, you know, yogis or practitioners use crystals in healing ways as well. And it's definitely used in Reiki.
It was something actually that I was fairly skeptical again about for quite a while, because I'm not sure I really believe in all the magical powers of crystals or the benefits that you hear about. And that could just be because actually I haven't done any real reading into it. But someone explained it to me probably a year or two ago, actually, about that in a really simple way that kind of made sense to me. And actually, most of the crystals have minerals in them, or are minerals themselves, and actually you can absorb minerals in a variety of different ways, right?
So like vitamins, and, you know, like you take orally.
Yeah, exactly. And so it kind of made sense to me that you could probably absorb some of the minerals through your skin, through touching them. Because I know some people will actually carry them around with them and touch them. Or I've heard some people even set intentions with them and
absolutely.
Use them for those types of things.
And you can put them in like water or your drink. There's drinks bottles out there now with crystals in.
Will you be setting any intentions or resolutions for the new year?
I'll probably write a list of, you know, different ones in different areas of my life. So obviously, like I said earlier, my craft one. But I think for next year, it'd definitely be, you know, to do more yoga, even try and do it every week, at least, if not twice a week. So I think it's just really good for your mind and your body.
Did you set any intentions or goals at the beginning of the year for the last New Year's?
Yeah, I did. I can't find the list now, but yeah, I definitely did. And again, obviously, I finished my job in March, so round kind of the December time anyway, I was thinking, you know, I did actually reduce my hours last year around December to 3 days a week. And that was a big stepping stone for me to, you know, really kind of focus on more things. And I suppose for the new year, new year, I kind of was like, you know, to quit my job and really focus on my business this year is something that I really want to do. So that was probably my main resolution, you know, for this year.
Yeah, that's wicked. And good on you, because a lot of people don't have the balls or the guts to actually go through with these types of goals they have in mind. Or a lot of people say that they don't like their job or don't like this and the other, but do make a lot of excuses, and
they
enough,
still do it.
Some of them are, you know, some of their excuses are very valid, and not everyone is in the position to quit their job and set up a business.
Of course,
but I think we're both fairly lucky that we had the foresight to go down the route of the narrowboat life.
Definitely.
And I think that's certainly given me a lot of freedom in terms of the fact that in a couple of years I'll hopefully be debt free and I'll be able to fly around the country in my boat and try and enjoy stuff. But at the same time, I still need a job to live that life, right?
Absolutely, so. Yeah. And like everything you're doing now is like working towards that, and it's an end goal, and that you're here and doing it. So that's the main thing. But without, you know, boat life, I probably wouldn't, you know, have taken the plunge to, you know, quit my job because of like financial reasons. But obviously boat life has, you know, enabled me to, you know, be in that financial position that, you know, maybe if I don't make much one month, that maybe it'd just be okay. But obviously, if you've got a house and a mortgage to pay for, then you're kind of in the danger zone and worrying, and then you do get yourself into loads of debt.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, that is a worry. And I think that was something that I was really scared about, in if I was ever to go down that route. So I was definitely encouraged to try and explore other alternatives, and this one is something I just kept coming back to.
Definitely.
And I remember actually last New Year's, I said to my friend at the New Year's Eve party, I said, next year might actually be the year that I buy a boat and move on to it.
Look, you're here now.
And I know. I thought, to be honest, that I was probably, you know, telling porcupines, and that I was just actually just dreaming. But halfway through the year, I managed to set myself to move on to buy a boat and get one.
And it's great you've done it.
I've tried to move away from the typical New Year's resolutions, probably in a sense like you have with making lists, because actually a lot of them don't follow through, and a lot of them are very difficult in terms of the time of year that people set them, because straight after New Year's, everyone says, oh, I'm going to start that diet, or, you know, start that healthy lifestyle. And it's really hard, I think, in the middle of winter to try and do that. So I have tried to set more of an intention, really. So in the past, I've used things like gratitude or simplicity and things like that. It's just more of a general focus. And I've found those have been really helpful for me, because it's something I keep coming back to, but at the same time, it's not the end of the world if I don't stick to it, because there's nothing to stick to, really.
Of course, yeah.
Is there something like that you have through your life that you have a focus on in terms of pushing yourself in a certain direction?
I just think that as a person, you just got to keep growing, and that, you know, you just got to keep setting yourself like mini challenges and obviously any like opportunity you get to go for it. So, you know, I applied to my teaching job at the college, and I, you know, didn't, you know, I thought, well, if I get it, I get it, it's brilliant. And if I don't, then, you know, there's, you know, it's not right, it's not the right thing to do. So I think just keep, you know, to keep growing as a person and to like pushing yourself into different things and different experiences makes you grow, you know, more and more and more, and gives you more experience.
I think that's so important, because the moment you stop growing is when things start to get really boring or stagnate and actually
monotone.
Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, it's so uncomfortable sometimes to grow and to push yourself outside of your comfort zone. And to challenge yourself and to do things that you don't particularly want to do, because it's so much easier to just carry on doing what you're doing. I found actually in the last couple of months I've definitely been at an uncomfortable point, but I think I've looking back, I've grown quite a lot recently in terms of work and as personally as well, by pushing myself out there. And do you think you've changed in any way since you start, you know, since I knew you? Obviously, I think you've changed quite a lot since I saw you secondary school. What ways do you think you've evolved in yourself?
Do you know what? I was thinking this today, because on my dog walk, I stumbled across like a hunt meet. So obviously lots of horses and dogs. And, you know, back when I was 15, that's something I'd probably be doing. But now I definitely don't obviously agree with that. I feel that when I was 15 and I was doing that kind of thing, obviously I was following the footsteps of my grandparents and my mum. So they both went hunting as, you know, as youths. And I actually wanted to set the tradition as well and go myself to experience that and to see what that would be like. But them kind of, you know, that kind of hobby and interest was put upon me from kind of my family and what they did, and not actually exploring my own ideas and, you know, discovering myself and, you know, what I want to do. But I feel like since, you know, since my 15-year-old self, I've really like grown to, you know, become who I am and what I believe in and what I love. And also I think like that's helped. Again, I'm not saying that, you know, you don't get influenced, because obviously since I've been, you know, with my partner Dan, obviously he's really opened my eyes up to kind of alternative living and alternative lifestyle. And that you can just be a bit different, and you don't have to work 9 to 5. And I just think that I feel like I am my individual person now, and that I can explore and grow in that way and try new things and different things, but it's because I want to do it and not because everyone else around me is doing it, because my friends are doing it, or because my parents have done it. So yeah,
that's very inspiring. It's really nice to hear, because you can very easily get trapped in the idea that you have to follow a certain path in
life. And I think even now people are still, you know, feeling like that, even at our age. And I do see like a lot, you know, a lot of people that we went to school with, they are all like, oh, we need to get a house and a mortgage and a brand new car and stuff. And you know what? Why can't you be different? And why can't you, I don't know, go and live in a yurt in France? Like, why can't you do that? I mean, I just think that just being yourself and individual and just not judging people, I think that's so important. And that, you know, you'll just go far in life if you, you know, will just branch off and not be a sheep.
Totally.
Yeah.
How did your family respond to you going in a slightly different direction to how they maybe thought you would turn out?
Obviously, you know, they do pass comments occasionally, which, you know, does, you know, hit home. But obviously they are really supporting what I do, and without them I wouldn't be here.
Quite literally.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, my parents have supported me, you know, with my decisions and with my job and my business and what I'm doing. But obviously they probably do think, oh, you're not, you know, you haven't got like a massive career or a big career or a mortgage, and they probably quite like me to get on the property ladder. But actually, I think they know I'm really happy at what I'm doing, and I think that probably is the main thing for them.
Have you had any other reactions from people outside of your family? Any particularly good or bad reactions from people?
So like obviously a lot of people probably think I'm older than I am, especially at workshops, because, you know, I've got my own home and stuff. You know, and obviously people do think it's a great idea what I'm doing. Obviously some people probably think it's a bad idea, but everyone's entitled to their opinion. And I think the main thing is like, long as I'm enjoying it, and you know, that's the main thing, because, you know, you've got to be happy in life of what you're doing. You know, life's too short to be unhappy. And that's the main thing, really.
Certainly is. I think that's quite a good note, really, to end where we are. I've certainly learned a lot about you in the last an hour, I think, we've been recording for. And it's been really good to have someone quite inspiring on the podcast, because
you are
pushing the idea out there that you don't have to follow certain ideas and ideologies. And actually,
definitely,
I think it would be nice if more people tried to do it and tried to just be a bit more accepting, really, because even if they're happy to go down the standard and the typical routes, because there's no one way to live life. There's,
no.
You know, it's not right or wrong, but it's nice to have more people open your eyes to think that you can do it, because there's no way that a year ago I thought it was feasible for me to get on the boat. But actually meeting you and Dan really showed me that there's someone my age, someone from a very, very similar background, considering we were friends in school, you know, actually that I'm not just dreaming and this is something that I can do if I really set my mind to it.
Definitely.
So thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
And thank you for popping back up into my life again, you and Dan and Twiggy, best neighbours I could have asked for.
So, that's really good. So, if only, you know, back then, 6 years ago at school.
Who would have known?
Who would have known we were be sat here who doing this now? Known? But yeah, it's amazing.
You just can't predict these things.
No, absolutely.
Thank you. And thanks to Will for recording, as always.
Thank you, Will.
And thank you for listening. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care.